We have to wait half an hour. Guests are waiting for us. And I don't know why we cannot start on time. The president has got an appointment with leaders of political parties this afternoon at 12:30. And I think that we are hard-pressed for time, and I want to appeal to members, please. Now, we still don't have a quorum to pass the resolution that is needed. It needs to go to the Speaker's office on Mr. William Stuckey, and I need one more member. So can we find one member somewhere until it's 8? So that at least we can pass this resolution and it can be sent for processing. Wilma was here. Is she here now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. It's quite urgent that we get this to the Speaker, otherwise it can't go onto the agenda this afternoon, and we are being held up. It's a short resolution. The Portfolio Committee on Communications, having considered the request from the Minister of Communications for appointment of Mr. William Stuckey to serve on the Council of the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa in terms of Section 5.1b of the ICASA Act, recommends that the House approves the appointment of Mr. William Stuckey. That's the resolution. Can I have a proposer and seconder? Proposed by Jay Killian.
I second it.
Seconded? Seconded by Mr. Van der. Agreed to? Thank you very much. Agreed? Thank you very much. Can this be sent off urgently to the Speaker's office and for processing? Ladies and gentlemen, my apologies for this delay. At least this item is completed. It's because it's going to the House this afternoon. Today we have, the committee has invited ICASA to brief us on what it sees as the processes or the steps and the measures to be taken in future so as to regulate the interconnection rates in this country. We've been aware of the fact that over the last 2 or 3 weeks or so, ICASA has got an informal process, what they call a moral suasion process that they were busy with, to try and nudge the operators into a voluntary agreement to reduce the interconnection rates. It seems as if by last week Friday that process has not yielded any successful results. I'm sure they will talk to us, but basically, that, as I understand it from the media report, is that process has collapsed. During the course of our own public hearings, I think all the stakeholders that participated there were unanimous in their view, that this is principally a responsibility of ICASA. To regulate this sector is the fundamental responsibility or core competence of ICASA. And we all expressed very serious concern that over the last 3 or 4 years, ICASA had not succeeded in completing the various processes and procedures set out in Chapter 10 of the Act, and therefore we have this problem. So today we have called them in, because they report to us. We've called them in, and we want to understand from their point of view in terms of their own work programs and schedules exactly how they see this process unfolding, and at what point will we see a conclusion to this process. And thereafter, hopefully, we will have a more scientifically based interconnection rate in the country. So that's really what the purpose is, and I'd like to invite all the members of the council, and I think there are some staff members here also. Mr. Nkuna is the acting chairperson of the council at the moment, so I'm going to invite him to introduce his team. I take it that you'll give us a short presentation, and then it will be open for discussions by members. I want to try and round off this session by 12:30, because I'm aware that a number of people have to leave, so we're targeting for 12:30. I don't know if we're going to manage our program, because we also have to approve our report, the oversight visit report, the draft report was circulated. And I hope members have had a chance to read through it and if you are broadly in agreement, maybe this afternoon before we leave, I'd like us to approve the report. But let me then hand over to Mr. Nkuna to introduce the team and to take us through the presentation.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, honorable members and dear guests in attendance. We are here, five members of council. We wish to render the apology on behalf of the chairperson, Councillor Van Rooyen, and Councillor Bachi, who are not here. The chairperson and Councillor Van Rooyen are out of the country attending an event organized by the International Institute of Communications. This is a forum of regulators worldwide. We have been part of the IEIC for a very long time. And by the time we received the invitation to come here, they had already made the necessary arrangements to attend to the IEIC, where the chairperson is also going to participate in some of the proceedings. He's on the program. Councillor Bhaji fell sick early this morning here in Cape Town, so she was rushed to hospital, Chris Barnard Hospital. So five of us are here. It's myself, Councillor Robert Nkuna, Councillor Mahage, who is going to lead the discussions as the chair of the committee that is dealing with the matter in question, Councillor Sibanda, who is also a member of the committee, Councillor Sotrigwa, and Councillor Ntombela. The CEO is here with us also to speak on issues that may arise regarding to capacity issues as well as funding issues in regard to dealing with economic regulation. We have other colleagues from the authority who from time to time will assist us with questions. Chairperson, without much ado, allow me to ask Councillor Mahage to commence with the presentation.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members of Parliament and the Portfolio Committee. We meet again. Chair, the Councillor Nkuna, of course, will be leading the discussions. It's just that he's humble, but he's actually going to be leading. My job will be to make the presentation. But nonetheless, thank you very much. Our presentation is very short, Honourable Chair, and then we will talk briefly about what governs interconnection in the ECA. Then we have two slides, which essentially simply shows the you know the mobile termination process. And then we'll talk about the MTR price trends in the last few years, and then the regulatory history, as well as current initiatives. Chair, there are three areas where interconnection is governed in the ECA. These are, one, the obligation to interconnect in terms of Section 37(1). These are regulations facilitating interconnection, but not price. Pricing principles do not actually mean price control. Transparency of network components, non-discrimination, equivalent pricing of services and others are really what we refer to as pricing principles. They are not actual price. Then we have the interconnection pricing principles under in terms of Section 41. Section 41 reads as follows, part of it: the authority may prescribe a framework of wholesale interconnection rates to be charged for interconnection services, taking into account the provisions of Chapter 10. It's very important, Chair, to emphasize that a framework is actually what I might term a base, you know, a context in which one does things. It's very important because the key word there is framework. Then the third leg is pro-competitive remedies. And the outcome of market review and regulations under Section 67(4) will then lead us to specific pro-competitive remedies. This may specify price control. There are other remedies in terms of Section 57, 7. There's a whole list of other remedies that may be applied. These include fairness, reasonableness, transparency, accounting separation, which then touches on issues like co-working. These are one of the slides, Chair, which I thought we should present merely to demonstrate. This picture actually is a generic picture for any network. It is, I understand, a technical reality in this industry. In this case, we are talking about one network which originates as well as terminates the call. End user A is phoning end user B, and this is what happens. And we just want to note that origination and termination are equivalent services. We also want to note that, and I must emphasize, as I said, this is generic to all network, that the cost of the cost of origination is normally greater than the cost of termination because of the network configurations. And of course, operators would like to capture and keep their customers, so they always make it a point that their calls within the network are cheaper. Then the second network speaks to two networks on this occasion. I've already mentioned right up to the issue of cheap calls within the network, but then there are other factors, factors which come into play here. The tendency, of course, in an environment of this nature, a network operator will choose to keep their own customers. And we have this experience where interconnection amongst the various operators or termination risk tends to be expensive. It's all known now. I think even the operators themselves have admitted that the call termination rates are high. We know that it's a fact now. They are 125. And of course, there may be other charges like access. These are monthly network interconnection fees, which could be charged on top of the termination rate. And of course, excessive terms and conditions. Chair, the authority only had the powers to approve the principles within an interconnection agreement. As I mentioned earlier, on issues such as transparency of pricing, dispute resolution, fault line reporting, etc. The authority had no price control powers does not have any price control powers until the completion of Chapter 10 of the ECA. In terms of the Telecoms Act, of course, certain actions could be taken, but unfortunately, maybe unfortunate is not the right word, but in terms of the new Act, the ECA, we've got to follow certain processes and procedures which are encapsulated in Chapter 10. And the slide, of course, indicates what happened. This slide, if I'm not mistaken, we showed it to the committee on the 15th of September. It merely indicates the price trend in the last, since 1994, right up to where we are today. Honorable Chair, we will touch on the two-pronged approach in handling interconnection issues. And this will be the competition framework, which addresses, of course, the issue of price controls, amongst others, as well as the interconnection regulations. And perhaps to show what has happened from 2007 up to now. Chair, during 2007, an inquiry was undertaken, and in that inquiry, all networks were found to have significant market power. At the same time, as far as interconnection regulations was concerned, the draft interconnection regulations were released in terms of Section 38. And what happened at that point is that those draft regulations contained pricing aspects, which were actually based on the Telecommunications Act. It has to be recalled that the mode of thinking at that time was still in terms of the Telecommunications Act. However, this should not have happened. And realizing that this should not have happened, and another set of regulations, which this time excluded pricing, was released in 2008 in terms of Section 67.4. This was around April, May 2008. Now, the regulations were found to be too rigid, and they prejudged the environment. We will explain as we go further what we mean by that. So what happened was that a process for implementing going forward with the process was implemented and designed. And you recall, Chair, that we talked about phase one, phase two, and phase three. We will demonstrate this as we move on. What would have happened, actually, moving now to the side of interconnection regulations, should have been the release of interconnection regulations which had no bearing on price whatsoever. This has been done, Chair, and the process is about to be completed. Now, there has been a lot of talk about the COACM, Chart of Accounts Cost Allocation Manual. This was a requirement for operators to report their financial accounts or submit their financial accounts to ICASA in terms of the license conditions and terms of the previous licenses which were not converged, that is the cellular licenses, MCTS, as well as public switch telecommunications network, in terms of the Telecommunications Act. The purpose was really to reveal the costs. The regulations did not address any market power whatsoever, because the Telecommunications Act was not designed for competition per se. It was really a monopoly instrument. One can go into detail to demonstrate why it was a monopoly instrument to protect certain operators. Nonetheless, these costs are very important, because we view them as an input to the competition framework in terms of the ECA. In other words, it's very useful information which we have to use in moving forward to address the issue of the cost of calls. Now, Chair, I referred to this earlier to when I was talking about the how, the way forward. This is part of the process. It is simply to show that to date, we have actually addressed the issue under phase one, which is essentially the declaration of significant market power. We started, of course, with the market definition in terms of those sections in the Act. In 2007, a discussion document was released. And as a result of that discussion document, there was an engagement with the stakeholders. And the final outcome of that portion of the process was the production of the findings document. This was around December 2007. Now, the next phase is to look and evaluate any potential remedies and decide which remedies may be applied to the various markets. Perhaps here I should mention that if you take, for example, two companies, Vodacom and ECN, taking the end of the two spectrum, you may find that both companies are a monopoly in terminating calls, but their bargaining power is not the same. So that when we apply the remedies, these factors will have to be taken into account. This is why we refer now to choice of a particular remedy. This will be a particular remedy to a particular operator, depending on their market power. Now, yes, I think we can go to the next. Now, Chair, phase two is actually what we are about to embark on. We hope that we should be able to complete the process and come up with final regulations on call termination in March 2010. It's a very tight schedule, Chair, I must emphasize. We have to be careful that we don't run foul of, say, PAJA, for example. There are certain processes which we have to follow. We will try our best to fast-track the process where we can, but we have to ensure that in the fast-tracking mode, we do not sidestep or act outside the requirements of PAJA, amongst others. At this point, I would like to thank you very much for listening to this short presentation, and I'll hand over to Mr. Nkuna. Thank you, sir.
Acting Chair, are you going to add anything? Or?
Thanks, Chair. Just maybe on the issue of moral situation, as it was called. It is correct to say that the authority was engaging with industry to see to it if it was possible to reduce the call termination rate as soon as possible. And as honorable members had suggested, maybe giving us a good Christmas present. We engaged with the operators until on Friday last week. And in our engagement on Friday last week, we did not reach any agreement, given the fact that although MTN and Vodacom had indicated that there was an agreement between them, Cell C was not in agreement with what the two had agreed upon. And on the basis of that, the authority came to a decision that it is more proper to refocus all energy there is in the institution to what has been presented to Parliament. And that going forward, the authority will not engage with the operators, at least in terms of the moral situation process. Indeed, if there are other processes that force the operators to reduce before Christmas, we will welcome that. But in the meantime, we have decided to confine every energy at our disposal to doing what you have appointed us to do. And that's what we have presented to you. So the statements that you read on Friday or on Sunday in the newspapers are very correct to say that there were so many figures that were being bandied about, progress was being made, to say. But I think we think from the authorities' point of view, it's more proper to confine every energy to this process. So we are no longer engaged in the moral suasion exercise with industry.
Thank you very much. Members, there you have the short presentation. Questions, comments? Stefan Lebert? Go ahead. Is the tea and coffee outside? All right, so there's tea and coffee. If you want, just quietly, you can grab something and come back inside.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the first page, what governs interconnection in the ECA? I just want to find out the authority may prescribe. Is that, I believe that's part of the act, that they may prescribe. Isn't it the correct time, Mr. Chairperson, for this committee to look at the act and get rid of words like may? You know, the task of ICASA is to regulate. And as I read it now, they may regulate in a simple matter. So I'm worried about that word. And if you can give some more information on this framework of wholesale interconnection rates to be charged for interconnection services, taking into account the provisions of chapter 10. So a bit more of that framework, okay. And there's another word, may specify price control. It's not good enough to may specify. And that the outcome of a market review and regulations under S674, is this being done? Are you know where you stand at this stage, outcome of market review and regulations? So are you sure where are you standing now? Because I've got the indication that ICASA, or maybe the Council of ICASA, they don't know what the exact position is. There's a lot of uncertainties. And it's no allegation or whatever, but I think there's sort of an inferiority inside the ICASA councillors because they're not sure about their position. May they or may they not? This is the idea I get out of the whole thing. And just another question, Chairperson. If we look at the history of mobile termination prices, and we see a 515% increase in 4 years, I just want to know, why did ICASA allow this to happen? It's actually impossible. I think it's somewhere underneath the carpet or whatever this has been done. Look at the outcry of the Eskom price hike at this stage. And we were very, very silent about this 515%. And I think the people of South Africa, all of them nearly cell phone users, will be shocked to see this 515% increase. Aren't you feel ashamed of this, that you allowed this to happen? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Honourable Chair, well, I have noted the honourable member about the words that are used in the Act, the word may. But I'd like to address specifically the issue of whether we, as ICASA, have not been aware of the position in the market. The honourable member will remember that one of the slides indicated that we did identify certain operators as having significant market power. First of all, we identified the markets, which markets are actually in all the operators, by operators I'm talking now, by the main operators who can terminate calls. We have made a conclusion that all those who terminate calls, because they play in a monopoly environment in terminating their calls, are markets. These are markets. So we know what is going on in the market, if I may respond in that fashion. About the history of the price increases, one of the slides did indicate that, and I did mention this, that we had no power over imposing prices in terms of the Telecommunications Act. What happened was that Telkom, the price cap was applied on Telkom's price. But I remember that right at the beginning, I used to work for SATRA at that point, the baseline, the price of Telkom, we took what was presented, for example. But now, going back to the mobiles, because I think this is what we're talking about, the only thing that could happen at that time was to receive those regulatory reporting reports that I mentioned earlier. We have no power to impose prices. These prices were commercially set. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Edison Kazaraswala.
Thank you very much, sir. I think this first slide is very important to clearly explain the approach. Now, the honorable member is questioning the use of the term may, but if you look at the Section 41 regulations, these are simply pricing principles. The Act says the authority may prescribe a framework for wholesale interconnection rates. Now, what do we mean by pricing principles? These are principles that relate to issues such as non-discrimination, open access, and the like. But Section 38 regulation, the Act uses a must. Now, these interconnection regulations are already out. The authority has a draft that has been consulted upon. Unfortunately, operators expected us to deal with price control under the Section 38 regulations. And if you go back to the history of interconnection, that slide, you will see that at some point there was a convolution between your competition framework process and your interconnection regulations process. This competition framework process is new to South Africa. It's new to the regulator, whereas your other interconnection regulations, the Section 38, are a carryover from the Telecommunications Act. So what happened is that whilst we're still busy with the competition framework regulations, we crossed over to the Section 38 interconnection regulations and then included pricing issues, which we're not supposed to. Now, we have gone back, we have since gone back to the two processes of having a competition framework process and the Section 38 regulations process. And the Section 38 regulations are very critical because they deal with issues such as obliging operators to interconnect. In other words, nobody has got a right to refuse interconnection. And we have received complaints from smaller operators who have been refused interconnection by bigger operators. So in other words, these regulations cannot be downplayed, as some operators have tended to do. And they also deal with dispute resolution issues. So it's very critical that we differentiate these regulations. You have the Section 38 regulations that deal with interconnection principles. What is it that interconnection agreements need to contain? And then you have your Section 41, which is pricing principles, a framework for pricing. And then Section 67 deals with pro-competitive remedy. That is where you can now include a price control. And as the presentation has shown, we have gone past the phase one, which is defining markets and declaring certain operators to have significant market power. Now we are working on phase two, which will include remedies, pro-competitive remedies, one of which could be a price control, but there are many other remedies that we can come up with. So it's very critical for members to note this differentiation in how the ECA deals with interconnection. That you have Section 38, Section 41, Section 67, and they deal distinctly with different issues. Chair, thank you.
When you will respond, all these terms, market power, significant market power, they're actually meaningless to me. I must be honest with you. I don't understand what those things mean. Segments of market. So it's a language that you understand. It's a vocabulary that you are familiar with, and maybe the operators are familiar with. For us, talk to us politics. We'll understand that. You see, we can also throw terms, NDR, National Democratic Revolution. You might not understand that. Eh? Ideological hegemony. Eh?
DA.
So, DA, don't act at all. Now, talk to us in a language that we understand, number one. Number two, You see, unpack this slide that you got, where you got these blocks. Phase one. What are the mini steps? What exactly are you supposed to be doing, step by step? I must be honest, I don't understand. If you say you've completed phase one, what actually have you done? Do the industry players understand what you've done, and do they accept what you've done as valid, as authentic, as credible? Because it's pointless. You've done step phase one. Nobody knows what you've done, and they don't accept your findings or your results. You see, in December, you've got a findings there. December 2007. Now, from 2008 and 2009, 18 months, nothing is being said. What have you done? We don't want to go into the past. I really don't want us to dwell in the past. But I want to understand, in phase one, where are we practically? And is everybody in agreement with what we've got? Because if there's a dispute about phase one, and you say you're ready to embark on phase two, then we're going to hit a problem. Because people are not accepting what you've done in phase one as legitimate. So put those cards, each one of them, on the table for us here, because I don't know if maybe other people understand, but I'm really a dumb cop here. I don't understand all this jargon and the procedures. So can someone help us there? It's not a question. I think as you respond, you might want to begin to fill in these gaps, because I see huge gaps, at least in my mind. Now, I've had quite a few hands. Vilma? Yes?
Thank you, Chairperson. On the first slide, ICASA said that under obligations to the interconnection, it states that regulations facilitate the interconnection rate, but not pricing. Then, on the slide where they have the history, they set regulations too rigid. Regulations and prejudge the environment. That's not clear to me. What regulations was too rigid? And what was, is it the rigid regulations? Was it too, is it for the prejudging environment? Prevent the pricing for not going up? I don't know what regulations you are talking about and what was too rigid. Was that too rigid for the pricing not to go up? And I want to know what was rigid. What was it? What was rigid? Thanks,
Chair. I'll attempt to quickly deal with all the questions, and other councillors will make an addition. Now, in terms of interconnection, number one, we're saying that every licensee should have an obligation to interconnect on transparency and non-discriminatory basis. So that is the regulations that they're talking about. So there are regulations that apply to all licensees. So as soon as you are licensed, you should have an obligation to interconnect based on the principles that have been outlined. But then, for those operators who are found to be dominant and anti-competitive, then you add further remedies, and that's where the issue of price control comes in. So let's imagine a situation whereby even the newly licensed vans have an obligation to interconnect by virtue of being licensees. That is generic. It cuts across the board, because we believe that interconnection is very key to facilitate competition. Now, we then say that for those big operators who operate in markets that are not competitive, then we add another obligation, and that is where price control is going to feature. So there will be remedies that apply to all and remedies that apply to those big operators that are not competitive. That's what we're referring to. Now, in terms of the rigid regulations that were referred to, these were our own draft regulations, which were subjected to consultation with industry. What were done with those regulations were just put remedies, just in general to say that these remedies will apply, as opposed to aligning each remedy with the problem, with a particular problem. So we then felt that they were rigid in the sense that they just threw remedies all over the place without aligning those remedies with a particular offense. Excuse me? Oh, okay. So that was what...
You see, I'll tell you what is the problem here.
Can I want to say to the chairperson now, you're really trying to confuse us deliberately. You're not answering the question straight. And if you can answer the question straight and in simple, plain English, we can understand you. You know, the other councillors spoke now about in the regulations you've got the word principle. There's no principle there on the board. Where does it come on, this principle? You know, and then you're also trying to confuse us with the Telecommunications Act. Because it didn't mean when the Telecommunications Act was repealed and the ECA came into effect that you had to stop what you were doing. And did you inform the minister that time that now you have to start the process over? Chairperson, I agree with you. Plain, simple English language and no long questions. Give us answers, please.
Chair, I'm looking now at the slide. I know a specific question was asked about what rigid means, what prejudgment means. Those regulations, and I made an example with comparing a major player and a smaller player. I literally mentioned names of the two companies, Vodacom and ECN, and said those regulations tended, as Mr. Nkuna has said, to cast one solution, say, over the two. They did not say, well, we have to be selective because of the power. By power, I mean the power to set prices without being challenged, you know, or raise prices, for example, without being challenged by a countervailing move by another operator. That's what I mean. So the rigidness was like that. We're applying one solution to problems which vary in terms of intensity and depth. I think that's how I think I can explain what is meant by rigid. They were rigid. They were not flexible enough to apply to specific cases depending on the problem, depending on the specific problem of a player. So that is what I could say. But Honourable Chair, you have also referred to what we mean by market definition. I think the first slide, phase one, I think referred to market definition. Now, market definition, well, and analysis, you know, the Act refers to define the market, analyze the market. Call termination is a market, broadly speaking. But then you have various markets in the various operators. We have to define those markets. They are called wholesale, called termination. We define them as such. You terminate your call in operator A, it's a specific market, B, and so on and so forth. Now, the declaration of, you know, this concept of significant market power, I think the Competition Act, I think, does refer to this. I think dominance, I don't remember quite well the words that are used there. But you have significant market power. If, for example, you control the market. I think figures that have been mentioned are, say, up to 35% of the market. 45%, I think, you definitely have dominance. And 35%, yes, you are dominant if it can be proven that you are. Dominance or market power really means that you it's very difficult to challenge you in that specific market. In the cases that we are talking about, call termination, for example, it's almost impossible. You cannot challenge, Cell C as a terminator of calls. You can't say, well, I'll replace Cell C and then be able to terminate the calls, you know, which means therefore that Cell C has got power, has got market power. Let me stop here. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Chair, maybe let's go.
Tell me, are you getting any wiser?
No.
This is the thing. We are not understanding. I'm not saying you are wrong.
And we are not stupid.
But we are not understanding the language. Right. Now, I'm going to, because I see there are quite a few hands. Maybe let me allow a few hands. Okay? Let's get the questions on board. But I'm going to do an unusual thing later on. I might call upon then the technical staff people to talk to us, not the counselors. Maybe you can, you see, we see a forest here. Beautiful trees, but it's dense foliage. There's overgrown flowers and bushes, and we can't see. Now we want you to hack, to clear the ground so that we can see the trees. That's what we want to see. What exactly is this beautiful forest all about? But we can't see it at the moment. It's all dense at the moment. So can someone help us hack through it?
Chair, at the previous presentation that was made on the 15th of September, the format was different, but actually the content was pretty much the same as what we've received today. Now, what is of a concern is it seems as though ICASA is so has fallen prey to concerns and to their own limitations. Maybe in terms of knowledge, of expert knowledge, etc. And it is not, I do not understand why. Simply because in terms of the ICASA Act, you have an opportunity to call in experts as consultants should you face specific complex processes. Now, what we've seen, Chairperson, is in this past process, you've referred to it, we've had a lapse of 18 months. Very critical issue. First of all, can you perhaps explain how was it possible when you passed the first set of regulations, the draft regulations in 27, how was it possible that you could have done that on the basis of the Telecommunications Act? Although the ECA, the Electronic Communications Act, was already in place. How did that come about? Can you please just explain to us why did that happen? Secondly, can you also explain your reference, and I think that is part of the frustration that the chairperson also has here, significant market power. You are indicating that it must be done on specific markets and it must be analyzed within specific, in every one of those operators. But altogether, if we look at the industry and if we look at the history of call termination rates, then it must be just plain for everybody to see that there are two major players and that the exact announcement of their agreement in 21. Within a period of 2 years, this massive 515 price increase came about. So clearly those two were actually the animals. So now that brings me to the second pertinent question, and that is why did you then publish regulations, draft regulations, that were so rigid, that would not open up the market, because you had the power to, within that process, actually come about with regulations that would open up the market, to break the stranglehold that these two huge operators have, barring newcomers to enter the market and to establish a good footprint. So that in the end, we would see competition, which would result in cheaper call tariffs, in cheaper termination rates, etc. Because you have the power. If we look at the power of the regulator in other countries, Chairperson, they are significant. I mean, Ofcom is really feared in Britain. Why is it that you almost feel that you've become a prey of your own fears and limitations that you've placed upon yourself? Why don't you just proceed, take the necessary steps, get the right expert advice so that you perform your duty without fear or favor, nonpartisan, for the benefit of the people of South Africa? Thank you.
Yeah, Chairperson, I want to understand the process that you outline here. Is that separate from the policy directive that the minister issued? And what are you doing about that policy directive that was gazetted on the 14th of October? That's my first question. The second one is that if you want to know where to start, on your history page here, you should start by explaining to us the COCAM, what you have achieved through COCAM, to reveal the cost. You've done that. You say so yourself here. But then on the other hand, you say that you are not allowed to deal with pricing. But in the same breath, you are saying you have taken pricing out of the regulations. Why have you taken pricing out of the regulations when it says in Section 41 that the authority may prescribe? So you're contradicting yourself, and that is what is confusing us. The last one is that are you not to say a regulator proactive? Are you not monitoring the market? How come that in the prepaid market, Cell C, MTN, and Vodacom is basically identical? You want to tell me ICASA did not notice it and ICASA did not act? Because then ICASA has believed their interpretation, their legal interpretation, that they can't interfere with pricing. I think ICASA needs a new legal team, and maybe we should ask Advocate DeLange to assist you. Because the legal interpretation, the legal interpretation of some of the statements that you are making, that is what we can't understand. The last point is the where's that David now? The issue of moral suasion. We knew from the beginning that moral suasion was not going to work. But ICASA wanted to go moral suasion. Now, can you give us a report what happened in that meeting on Friday? Is it true that MTN and Vodacom refused to reveal a figure in front of ICASA to the other operators? Did they refuse? Because they then went outside of that process, if it's true, and then announced a 19% cut. That to me is collusion, that they have not announced the actual agreement that they've got in front of ICASA, but they actually went outside of ICASA to go and announce a 19%, 24%. What is your view on that? And now you have just dropped moral suasion. And also there's another process that's taking place where the ministers also tried moral suasion with the operators. But first answer my first question. What are you doing about the policy directive from the minister?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, let's start here. We all agree that interconnection is very key in competition in the sector. That is the point of departure. And then we see that interconnection involves big and small players. And that what the regulator is saying is that there should be general rules that apply to all and sundry, to small and big players. And those are about non-discrimination, transparency, and so forth. Now, with the big players, now we're talking about the big players, the dominant players. That's when we're saying that price control should apply to those dominant players and not to smaller operators, because those smaller operators don't have power to negotiate with the big ones. So what we want to do is to say to the smaller operators, you have an obligation to interconnect with everyone, don't discriminate and be transparent. But that's part one. Part two, we then say, go to the big operator, like, Vodacom, say you are dominant. In addition to the general rules that say, be transparent and don't discriminate, we want to put price controls, which should be based cost on base, should be based on cost. So that is all what we're saying. Interconnection is a key input factor in the sector. Generally, everyone should interconnect, but the big players should also be regulated in terms of the price that they charge. That is what we're saying. Honorable member, it's true that we have sought legal advice. The whole process that took place in 2007 was based on the advice that we received from one of the reputable companies around town. It was Gemini. And currently we are working with Maud McDonald to conclude the process that has been presented here. So it is fair enough to say that we have always gone out to seek legal advice. Very quickly, in terms of the ministerial policy direction, we have seen the ministerial policy direction, and as you will recognize, the policy direction is still for public consultation because it invites public input, and as the authority, we are working on our own input to the ministerial policy directive. It has a closing date, and by the time of the closing date, we would have made our own input. Now, in terms of moral suasion, we agreed to enter into moral suasion after industry indicated that they were willing to approach the authority and effect some reduction even way ahead of the conclusion of the regulatory process. And we then said that if that is the case, then it's fine if you are able to reduce. But then we said to them that any reduction will have to be based on the cost information that we have, and those cost information comes from the Qualcomm information. The latest Qualcomm document that we have is dated June 2009. So we then said to operators that if you want to make a voluntary offer, then that has to be related to cost. And we then said to them that we know your cost information. So when we came here to Parliament, there was a question as to whether that information can be released to the public. In principle, the authority would not have a problem with that, except that when the information was filed with us, the understanding was that it would be confidential information. We are currently seeking legal advice to see to it. Maybe Honorable Member Dilange can advise us whether we can release that information to the public. But this is one thing issue that we have raised with the operators. When we met with the operators on Friday, we then raised the same issue because there were other participants there that certain information should be made obvious to all participating entities. Because if we do not do that, that will amount to ICASA facilitating collusion. So the discussion with industry broke down on the understanding that the authority cannot condone collusion of the big players. If this information cannot be made known to all and sundry, including the proposed prices that they were suggesting, then that was a problem. We were informed, for example, that the MTN and Vodacom had reached some agreement. But then Cell C was not part of that agreement. And on the grounds of that, the authority says that this moral suasion thing, excuse me, is not getting anywhere. And on the grounds of that, we then chose to exit. Now, as to whether the minister will proceed with the moral suasion going forward, is something that the authority will not speak to, but the minister can address that. But if it does happen that there is moral suasion and there is some price decrease, then we'll welcome that, but we'll still continue with the regulatory process so that the final price should be based on empirical evidence. So just to conclude, on the issue of rigid regulations, we had already indicated that we had come with regulations ourselves. But those regulations were something like you can call one size fits all. And what we're trying to do is to realign those remedies so that remedies that pertain to smaller operators are aligned properly, so that we don't create barriers to entry by putting huge barriers for small operators, which should only be imposed on the big operators. So by rigidity, we are referring to that clarification that needs to take place between the remedies that are imposed on the big operators and the remedies that are imposed on the big operators. Chair, let me conclude by saying that we were caught in a situation of transition because the Qualcomm regulations came in 2004 in terms of the Telecommunications Act. Now, hardly 2 years after that, the Electronic Communications Act came into being. Now, what we tried to do was to find that alignment between the Electronic Communications Act and the work that was done in terms of the Telecommunications Act. As honorable members have suggested, we are not discarding that information. That's why we think that Qualcomm remains relevant insofar as it gives us all the information there is to be able to regulate. That is very correct to say that we have information in terms of Qualcomm. All what we're trying to do is to take that information of Qualcomm and align it properly with the ECA so that it remains relevant in terms of the new legislative landscape.
I'm going to allow you on that one. That's what I'm trying to understand. You say you are doing that. Is that accepted by the industry as a legitimate and credible process? Because this COCAM was done under the old Telecommunications Act. The information was accessed, etc., in terms of the old Act and the old regulation. Now, the findings there might still be valid today because those are factual financial figures that they're giving you. But to use that information, that empirical data, in terms of the new Act, the ECA, in your mind, you said it's no problem. What I'm trying to understand is that legally valid? Is it open to contestation and legal challenge? Because if it is, then we're sitting with a huge obstacle here. Then we can't proceed to phase two. Now, in other words, the rules of the game, are these rules commonly understood by all the players? That's what I'm trying to establish. Otherwise, you're telling us that you're going to go to phase two, but everything will be subject for contestation from there. We won't finish this in 5 years. Okay, so clarify that for us, and then we can take the other questions.
Thanks, Chair. This is what it means. The ECA says that all regulations that were passed in terms of the Telecoms Act remain valid until they are amended or reviewed and so forth. There are those regulations that were found that they don't even contradict with the ECA. There's no need to even bother with them. But with respect to Qualcomm, when we align it with the ECA, it will form part of the phase two exercise. So when we send the documentation out for consultation, Qualcomm will be one of those issues that will have to be subjected to further consultation so that it's aligned with the ECA. So what we've been doing, Chair, we've looked at all our regulations. There are those regulations that, even though they were passed under the Telecoms Act, they remain valid because certain sections were copied direct from the old laws into the ECA. So those ones don't have a problem. But these ones, the ones like Qualcomm that relates to competition, have been overridden by Chapter 10. And those are the regulations that we need to align with Chapter 10. Now, this is what we're going to do in phase two. When we talk about remedies that will subject to engagement with industry, a renewed Qualcomm will form part of that engagement with industry, whereby the authority will go to all and sundry and say that we want to continue to use Qualcomm in this format. What do you think? We'll receive representations from industry, and on the basis of those representations, then we'll be able to come to a conclusion and say this is how we are going to apply Qualcomm in the new context. So, Chair, you are correct to imply that the continued use of Qualcomm should not be arbitrary, but should be subjected to the necessary consultation process. And it will form part of those other related documents that have been mentioned in phase two for consultation with industry. And once we've received representation, then we will come with a final regulation, which then will be understood to be regulations formulated in terms of the ECA. So, Honorable Member, it's correct to alert that it should not be arbitrary, the continued use of Quachem. What we've been using now in terms of Quachem are figures, financial figures that we have. The big debate currently is whether, because even the committee asked the authority whether that information can be given to Parliament even on confidential basis, on the understanding that for you to be able to exercise your oversight, you want to see what we're talking about so that we don't talk in cross purposes. And we are seeking legal advice internally to find out whether Parliament, which exercises oversight on the authority, should not be allowed to see that which the authority comes here and speak about. So that's what we're doing. And as soon as we get clarity, we'll write to Parliament and give you the feedback on how, you know. But in principle, it will make sense for Parliament to see what we're talking about so that when we present here, it's not like maybe we say something, because we speak on the basis of the information that we have, and Parliament does not have the same information. Yet Parliament has to exercise oversight. So that is receiving a favorable consideration on our side.
No, thanks. What demands also of very difficult processes and so on. But look, there are a few issues. One issue is that which you have raised, which they have tried to respond at. I think at one point the independence of the authority, ICASA, and the issue of bouncing whatever they are doing with the industry, I don't think it should be equated to the way they must do things, because it will seem as if before they do something, they must get a yes from the operators. I think for me, as long as they know that they are within the prescript of what they must do, that's what they must do. You see, you can't stop the industry from contesting anything. So if the working will be that they agree, then it's when you move and so on. It becomes a futile exercise, because you are not exercising except that you must always have that agreement. But I'm not saying arbitrarily you must do things, but I'm just saying from where I am, I think it should be the issue of your normal way of dealing with regulation, not that you can't move if, as long as you are within your processes of doing the regulations and so on. But the issue, Chair, which I wanted to raise is in relation to this issue of the principle of transparency, which you are talking about. Will that go as far as dealing with this issue which is currently confidential? You see, there are issues now when you ask they are confidential. What does it mean, this principle of transparency? Will it go as far as dealing with those matters, as you deal with your regulation and so on? Or it will still be hamstringed by the issue of confidentiality, cannot be disclosed to the public and so on? Maybe if you can clarify that particular matter. The other issue, I must say, Chair, I'm happy that you are out of that process of moral switching. I'll be the first person to congratulate you that you have done very well to get out of that process, because you didn't have business in the first instance to be there anyway, to assist the industry to collude whilst you are overseeing them doing that very well. So to get out of that process is a good thing. You should not have been there in the first instance. So if we have contributed as a committee to cause confusion that you went there, we are sorry if we did. But you've done very well. Get out of that process and do what you are trying to present today here, which is what we have appointed you to do, not to morally persuade people and all these other things. But it was a good effort, which we have tried anyway. But I must say I'm very happy that you are out of that process. Let the process maybe move forward in other areas. I'm sure on your program which you are presenting, I want you to assist me. You see, you have come with a lot of stages, but you say it's phase one and phase two. So when you go to phase two, and then at the end you are saying end of March 2010. Now,
from where you are, do you know what to achieve when before 2010, you see? Or as a committee, you must just wait. You do whatever you do until come end of March 2010. Then we are able to say, no, no, you don't seem to be meeting your timeline. Or there is a possibility, or if I might request, that you are able to break it down what to achieve when. Before the 2010 March. Yeah, you see, 2010 March, the danger that will allow you 2010 March, come 2010 March. Now we must only ask you at this point what is happening and so on. Then you come with all these reasons, of course, genuine as they may be. But I'm saying, how do you break down this time in such a way that we understand what do you do when? So that when that date passes, we are able to say, because you say it will be here at this point. I'm saying that taking into consideration the issue that you might be legally challenged and so on. I'm not ignorant of that fact, but I'm saying from where you are, do you have a clear timeline when to achieve when, which is moving you to almost the 2010 March? And what is the safe net which you have put there for delays in this time frame? Because I assume that as you put your time frame, you cannot put the time frame such a way that is strictly applying to the process without anticipating that you might have delays somewhere in between and so on. What is your anticipation around those issues of delays and other issues which might come out? The other thing, Chair, I thought on your presentation, because you see, I must thank some of these operators, the small one and the big others. They've been interacting, I'm sure, with members of the committee many times these days in terms of views, in terms of this and so on. But also, if we go back to their presentation which they presented to us, you see the issue of interconnection is one issue. There are other issues which link to pro-competition, to unleash the competition in terms of the industry, not the interconnection issue only. You know the other issues, unbundling of the local loop. You've got your issue of number portability, you've got your pre-select carrier and so on. So my problem, what is lacking from your presentation, we are not talking to those things. And from where I stand, I think that although this one can achieve whatever it can achieve in terms of what we are trying to do, but these other issues, like for argument's sake, the absurdity of the current regulation, or whether it's Telkom, whoever is doing that, whatever operator, that you cannot do number portability with X number of customers, must have this X number. Clearly, that is, you see, you block the competition. It's anti-competition behavior, although you cannot say it open. But if you say you cannot do number portability when you've got this number and you put a huge number, which makes things difficult for a certain small operator to move the customers with their numbers and so on, surely that thing becomes a problem and so on. But I'm just raising those issues so that I would love to see a situation, if you have not thought about these other things in terms of, because I would like also you to timeline them. So you see, because you cannot delete interconnection as if it's the first and the end of this matter. There are these other matters which must also be attended to, but which need to be elevated to an equal status of importance as the issue of interconnection, so that when you finalize this particular matters, you are able to say this is what you are going to do. I'm not sure what have you said with the retail, whether as we are looking the interconnection, we are also, you see, because you see what might happen. We don't want, whatever the operators are announcing, but whatever they are announcing, our anticipation will be that it should be passed direct to the retail, to also be reflected in terms of the retail prices and so on. So that does not become an issue which makes them possible to do within, but there is no effect in terms of the retail prices and so on. But I just want to check what do you anticipate in an environment where you deal with interconnection, of course, with the other issues, and you don't see any effect on the end on the retail prices. What are you anticipating you are going to do? I don't want that you must think now. You think at that point when it does not happen. But as a regulator, I'm sure you also anticipate the behavior of the industry. This is what they might do. This is what they might not do. Then what happened and so on around that particular matter. So, Chair, those are the questions which I wanted to ask, except that the other issues are, what does the policy directive mean? You are telling us about this process. It's fine, phase one, phase two. What the policy directive means. Are you still going to be possible to stick to your processes with the policy directive, or what would be the approach around the, how to align the two in terms of that? Because I understand the policy directive as it is now is at the consultative stage, still need for 30 days for discussion and so on. Does that mean you are going to wait until that 30 days and that policy directive becomes something to be implemented, or as you leave here tomorrow, because it's a working day, people who are dealing with this matter, there will be hard at work in terms of dealing with that. Lastly, Chair, maybe it has been raised. We have raised this matter with DOC. Part of what we said we understand the issue of resources in ICASA and the issue of capacity in terms of financials and also in terms of human resources. Do you have what it takes? Does that section, which has been entrusted with this responsibility, have the necessary staff in terms of support, not the counselor, but do you have the necessary staff to support that work in such a way that you are able to focus? If you do, it's fine, but if you don't, then what do you do? The capacity, I'm sure you've raised that, are engaging other consultancy firms and other things around that particular matter, but do you have the support staff to do that? If you don't, what are you intending to do? Will that affect your deadline, 30 March and so on? But I must say that I would like, Chair, that you see, when you close your presentation, you must give us the committee leeway to fire you. If come end of March 2010, you are not delivering, you must give us that we fire you or resign. You commit yourself. That if you don't meet your own, we're not part of that thing, which you come out as a program, it's your own. Now, if you don't meet it, what must we do with you? If you can also explain, what do we do with you? Because this is one performance area which you are committing the public of South Africa, that you are committing to this performance area which you are going to deliver on 2010 March. If you don't deliver, what must we do with you? There might be an Easter present, I suppose, if we get this phone card for December. So if you don't deliver, what must we do? The Easter present.
Thank you. Okay, Chair, we'll be quick in answering the questions. We'll start the
Advocate Langa. I want to use Mr. Kowani's context. Mr. van der Berg, isn't it, when someone said we don't understand, he said, and we're not stupid. I'm not sure if he's right, I'm not sure if he's right. Because the way that you've got me in a tiz, I now believe that I'm an utter, complete idiot myself. So I think he's wrong to say that we're actually not stupid. Because it's the only conclusion I can arrive at. Because for me, this is so simple. If you look at the context of what Mr. Kowani said, of all these things that has to be done about the mobile, which you've never done, which you've never had an interest in, and you're not even telling us now how you're going to do it. That's the context. I don't want to take the context away, but I want to now first look at this interconnection. Well, my difficulty is this. Basic capitalism. You provide a good, you sell it. You provide a service, you sell it. You get profit added to it, and you do that. It's not difficult to work it out. Any accountant, any person can. That's why I think I'm an idiot, because it's so complex. You guys can't do this. What is it that the mobile industry, and here your technical people can ask, physically have to do to earn this what they're charging for? I mean, they call it a termination rate. Now, I'm sure there's not someone sits there with switches, and as soon as Mrs. DeLore's call is finished, they terminate and put switches down. So that's not what they're doing. So what are they doing? I think, I don't know anything about this, I'm just a lawyer, but I think they must have created a system which runs on computers. And these computers link the different people together, these different cell companies together and telco. And you call the one and it goes onto the system and it goes, does it, all happens by computer. Now, if I was a ICASA, and as stupid as I am, how will I then determine this connection fee? Surely I will just ask a simple question. Just one little question. Not what the cell phone operators are doing, by the way. You see, they're obfuscating things. They're trying to mess our heads up, and they're trying to mess your heads up. And it looks like they've succeeded for a long time with you, and they're busy succeeding with us. You see what the operators do. The operators have a service that is now developed since 1993. A network. So what they do is they say, all right, what we're doing in the future is this is how we're expanding our network. And when you look at interconnection fees, then you have to look at our whole network, how we're going to expand it, because if you meddle with some of our costs here, either interconnection fees or our profits or roaming or prepaid or whatever it is, if you start messing with that, we can't achieve that model. So that's what they've got us, everyone, to do, is to buy into their model, which is going to cost X, and there's a lot of assumptions attached to it, which obfuscates then very simple things, which obfuscates a simple thing like working out how much does it cost the operator of a cell phone company to do this, whatever they call the termination rate. As I said, I mean, for me, if there were millions of people we employed who were switching off phone calls and so on, I would say, great, we're creating jobs. But I know it's not like that. I know it must be done by computers. So the first thing I would ask them is come and show me how much it costs you to terminate each and every call. I'm telling you it's going to cost nothing because it's a computer that does it. They then can argue that, okay, the network they created has a cost implication to it. One can look at that. Once you've got that cost, and that's all you say you're interested in knowing from them, you're not interested in hearing any other things about how they're expanding and how they're going into the world and how they're going into the rural areas and how much it costs to go into rural. You're not interested in that stuff. Because the law tells you here that there's a thing called the interconnection rate. That's all you're interested in. How much does it cost for that? And then how much are we saying we'll add on to profit? And then say how much it costs on regulation. Now, you see, that's why I think I'm an idiot. Because I look at something and I see it's so simple. Then I come here and hear now for the how much meeting hour, we're still looking to 2010 and 20, how many ever, for you just to do a basic exercise like that. And moral suasion and God knows what else you're doing. Whereas all you have to do, and if they don't want to give you it in law, you've got the power to say, come and prove to me how much this interconnection termination is going to cost. In each case, once you've got one, how much it costs, that's the end of the story. You now know how much it costs. You now say, now you see for me, and that is why we're getting different prices. Some people say 15 cents. Some say 25, some say 40. These guys have now gone up to 95, MTN is 95, Cell C is 75, and so on and so on and so on. And the reason for it is you're not nailing it down at the source. You are interacting with a myriad of information that's got nothing to do with that one little thing. Now, when you do the other things that Mr. Kawani says, when you start looking at roaming and at retail and that, then maybe we have to then look at the rest of the model and so on. But at the moment, you are being absolutely bulldozed into a direction which to me is simple. Now, all these things I've said, I want you to say to me today, yes, you are an idiot, because you're completely and utterly wrong. And if I'm not wrong, then I want to know why do you need even a week more, a month more? Because all you need then is to find out what that cost is, and if they can't give it to you, I'm sure there are a lot of experts you can call in. Nothing stops you from calling experts and finding out what will that cost be. And from that moment on, it's a question of adding on profit, and that is what your regulation is. It's simple. Now, tell me that I'm wrong, that I'm dumb, or tell me, no, you're not so stupid. It's just we've not seen the wood for the trees. And it's a simple thing that we have to do here, is to get that cost, and from that moment on, we solve the problem.
So, Kolwani, today I can see the relevance of Lenin. Lenin. Lenin refers to useful idiots. But he also poses one simple question. What is to be done? That's all we want to know. What is to be done from now onwards? It is so easy. All right, look, you want to get a response because I know that members have to leave at 12:30. But I think we will have to reconvene after the House adjourns. Just to try and correct this one, because I think it would be a pity if we sort of adjourn in the next 5-10 minutes. Because I don't even think we've started grappling with the issues. And certainly from our side, I don't think we're any clearer or any wiser at the moment. We're understanding some of the things, we're getting there, but we are not clear about all the steps that Mr. Kulwan is talking about. In phase one, precisely what have you done? Phase two, what needs to be done? And the time frames? And then simplified, as Mr. DeLange is saying, that we don't have to complicate this process. If they do it like that in Britain, it's fine, that's Britain. They do it like that in the European Union, it's okay, very good. But we can determine our own destiny in this country. We don't have to imitate the European model and procedures. What is a simple procedure that we need to follow so that we can come to the end road? Now, I'm going to allow you to respond, but I want to test the committee. Can we reconvene after the House adjourns? We'll have to delay that then. We've got another engagement, but we might have to delay that. I really don't want all these people to come back again on another occasion, and the time frames are very tight now. We're coming towards the end of the year. So if you think about it, Mr. Kulwani, and we can maybe take a decision as soon as we close, at about 12:30 or 20 to 1. Now let him confer with other ANC members, so we'll see. All right, Mr. Nkuna.
Chair, we would be quick in answering the questions. We'll start with a councillor that side. Each councillor has an answer to any question, and then we quickly conclude.
Good day, honourable members. Interconnection is a very complex process. I'll just tell you at a personal level, it took 6 months for me to really understand what Chapter 10 required of ICASA. Just at a personal level, this is my own personal discipline to sit down and understand what it means. It is, Chapter 10 is not easy. It, in fact, out of all the chapters in the ECA, the most difficult to implement because it requires steps that must be systematically implemented. And it is probably the most demanding chapter in the ECA in terms of resources, in terms of time, and in terms of capacity in council. So that's just my opening line, but I just want to answer the honourable member directly. We have a business plan that we formulated at the beginning of this financial year. And in that business plan, we have 38 regulations that we had hoped to formulate within this financial year alone. The completion framework and the interconnection form part of those 38 projects in total. Now, ICASA and PUSIC does not operate in a vacuum. We also have to correlate our activities with the PFMA. And in that regard, we cannot change our business plan arbitrarily. So we are confined by the PFMA. We cannot change our business plan. So the Honourable Member Eric mentioned projects that we should consider. It is not because we don't want to. It's because we have to adhere to the business plan in terms of the PFMA. And we don't want to get into trouble with AG again if we play around with the business plan. But the handset subsidies regulations, I think you mentioned them, those are, we wanted to finalize them. Unfortunately, we were threatened with court action. We have revised them, and I think they should be published this financial year. In terms of the local loop unbundling regulations, again, those are held by Chapter 10. We first have to go through the Chapter 10 process before we can come up with the local loop regulations. I must emphasize this. Chapter 10 demands resources which CASA does not have in totem. And these resources come in terms of the budget that we need to get the consultants on board. We have had staff being poached by industry. This year alone, we have had Keith Weeks going to Competition Commission. We've had another staff member approached by another operator, and that staff member is about to leave. It depletes the resources internally. We basically train for industry. And that's a reality that we have to face and that we are trying to mitigate in terms of the salary scales that we are implementing so that staff are not easily poached. But that again obviously means that we really need a solid budget to support the kind of activities that we are currently undertaking. We have, as council...
Is the budget there?
The budget is there for this financial year, but in order to address this in a strategic way, in other words, do retail and wholesale so that the two converge at a point that disenables industry from playing with the figures, we need a solid budget. I'll just give you this once off. To get the consultants on board, most of them we have to import. They don't come cheap. I think our budget thus far, when I asked within ICASA, is 20 million that we've used up so far. And that they are budget intensive, that the specialists that work on Chapter 10 aspects or segments, that they don't come cheap. And most of them, unfortunately, are located in Europe, in the UK. So if you look at the history of consultants we've had, they come from Germany or UK. We have asked those consultants to ensure that their skills transfer in the process, so they are not just employed ad hoc. They transfer the skills at the arrangement they have with authority, and we hope in that process, we will be able to look at these issues more independently. But we cannot run away from the resource question. We just can't.
Yeah, Chair, very quickly to run through some of the questions before honourable members leave. I think the issue of consultation, honourable member, is not optional, because in terms of Section 4.4 of the ECA, every time we publish a regulation, we have to go through a round of public consultation. This does not mean that we want to take what the operators are saying, but it's to converse views so that, as Chair in the area indicated. So the idea is to do that in terms of the law. We can't consult for less than 14 days, for example. And here you're talking about working days, which excludes weekends and obviously holidays. In terms of the issues around whether transparency in regard to Qualcomm needs to be reviewed, I think this exists at two levels. One is with respect to Parliament itself. Okay, there's a public aspect of this. The bigger question is whether there should be information that the authority has, but then the authority says to Parliament that we can't give you this information on confidential basis. I think that requires immediate resolution, the issue of Parliament. Then the public aspect of information, whether information can be released. What we normally do with in terms of the ICASA Act, the discretion is on the authority to grant confidentiality. Unfortunately, in terms of Qualcomm, it was built in the regulations that information cannot be released. So maybe when we review the Qualcomm regulations and align them with the ECA, we also need to attend to that. Lastly, on the issue of the ministerial policy direction, what the law says is that before a direction is published as a final direction, it has to be a draft for public consultation. So it's only once it has been gazetted as a final direction that the authority will implement that direction. All we're saying now is that the minister has issued a direction inviting a public comment. And we are working on our own response, like any other stakeholder. And once that direction has been gazetted as the final direction,
then we would have to engage with it at that point. At this moment, all we're doing is to continue with the implementation of the Chapter 10 process, because the direction has not been finalized. And once the direction is finalized, then we'll engage it at that level. What Honorable Dilange said, we think is, as we've always known him, very bright. There is no doubt about that. But all we're saying is that such ideas, I think this session is also helpful so for members to also propose some ideas for consideration on some of the issues. So I think that should be taken in good light and in a good spirit, that the Honorable Member has gone at length to look at some of the possible options that can be considered in this exercise. But Chair, we understand very well that we need to find a way to simplify these issues and make sure that all of us, especially Parliament, which is the oversight board, is at once with the authority in terms of the language that we use when we discuss, you know, this kind of issues. And to the extent possible, we should be able to do everything possible on our side, because we definitely have an obligation to make sure that Parliament is at once with us. And if there are suggestions on how best we can improve communication, particularly on the technical issues, we are willing to do everything possible to make sure that the Parliament get accessible information that all of us can easily refer to.
I've asked the issue of Finland, other than, and also about you, what do we do with you? We've come end of March 2010, we've not delivered. I understand the legalities in between, but if you don't deliver, what must we do with you? You must make that commitment too.
No. Can I just respond now? What I want to propose, and I'm checking with the ANC at the moment, because the other parties seem to feel it's okay. Can we adjourn at this stage? We'll ask them to revise their presentation and to deal with the outstanding questions when we come back. That's the councils. But Mr. Motlana and your staff, you see, there are technical people here. And I really want to take this unusual step, and members must tell me whether I'm out of order. If I'm out of order, it's fine. But I think that, you see, the technical work, we're not getting that out. Because that's really what we want here. Now, if that can be presented, you work now over lunch and for a while thereafter, and see if you can put it together for us. So the day we leave here this afternoon, all of us here have a clear idea of the steps and the time frames and what are the outputs or the outcomes, each step of the way. So by next week, if we're supposed to be doing this, that's the deadline, and this is the outcome. 3 weeks thereafter, we're supposed to complete the consultation of something, fine. We want the actual steps. If it can be done, and I think Mr. Kolwani has raised a very important point. If you can't do it by March, let's be honest with that. Because, look, there's political pressure. But there's no point instituting a process because there's political pressure, and then we mess it up. Because all that will happen, and you and I know that, you'll end up in court. And we exert pressure, we can stand outside here and push, and the minister, and anybody can push. But you go to court. You have to defend your processes. So, if you need more time, look at it carefully. We've been asking all the time, have you got the capacity? Now, one of the councillors is saying that a number of people are leaving or about to leave. It's a depletion of your resources. The experts, the international experts, are they on board? And then the money. You see, Mr. Motlana must tell us, in this financial year, it ends in what, March? Have you got X sum of money to pay somebody for work completed? Because if he hasn't got, and you will have an expectation, then you know next week you're going to come and tell us that, no, we don't agree, we are still arguing about this. So he must tell us also, he's part of this team. He's sitting there with his team, he's listening quietly. Yes, of course, the council reports to parliament. But I mean, that's the administrative backup for this whole operation. Is it in place? We're not getting that sense here at this stage. So, Mr. Kulwani, can we meet this afternoon? I don't know.
We're busy discussing that, but you see, the problem we wanted to check that were adjourning because of the leader of the IT was the only person meet the president that has passed to us as a leader of an opposition. There's no other leader of an opposition here except her, as one issue that were adjourning because of her. But secondly, it says that we've got a long outstanding study group after the house. If we are going to meet after that study group, maybe we can't meet, but we need to dispose that matter of InfraCorp also holding a lot of things to happen, particularly in the rural areas for receiving the network and other things.
What time does the house stand today?
Quarter past three.
Maybe later?
What we're not comfortable at is to postpone that joint study group meeting. We think that matter is also key, especially some of us who come from rural provinces. We must deal with that matter. But after that matter, if maybe score past three, it means if we dispose of that matter, we can reconvene at four.
After four.
Or after four.
No, I just wanted to say it will not be before that time, Chairperson. And then secondly, some of us have other committees as well to attend to.
All right. Now, the only reason why I thought we should consider 12:30 is because Patricia and Mr. van der Berg also has left. But we can go on for another, till 1 o'clock or slightly longer than that. It's fine with me. But I don't think we're going to, you see, they are not going to be able to take this discussion further at this stage, particularly in terms of the steps and all that we want. It's not, I mean, I think they'll have to sit down and actually design it for us. Yes.
I have a question that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the steps, which, if with your permission, I'd like to ask. One of the small operators who came to give submissions during the parliamentary hearings said that there's no need to conduct a market study or to establish significant market power, because CoACAM regulations contain the requirements that interconnection be cost-based. Now, you've just spoken about how the fact that CoACAM is a holdover from the Telecommunications Act means that you can carry on implementing it, but you have to bring it in line with the ECA. The ECA has its own competition chapter, which is Chapter 10. Can you implement a cost-based interconnection regulation in line with CoACAM and simply not even pay any attention to Chapter 10? Does that option exist for you?
No. Be glad to answer that, and Renato will...
No, hold on. I just want to establish a procedure now. Can we adjourn for 10 minutes so that we can just decide what's the way forward? If we're going to come back this afternoon, that's fine. Then we can, you know, get a few responses, and then we know if we can hold over things. But if we can't meet this afternoon, then we'll have to look at our program. And the program is quite tight at the moment. So can I suggest that we just adjourn for 10 minutes? Let me see what the other party says and what the NC says, and we can then decide on the way forward.
What?